Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. John Ledyard and Trevor Sikkema from thedraftnetwork.com on a beautiful Wednesday morning, welcoming you to Hump Day officially with interior offensive line analysis. This is it, Trevor. Last day of offensive line talk.
Thank God. Summer.
You made it.
I'm not going to talk O-lineman until February.
We're going to go all see. Jonah Williams is going to give up 6 sacks in the college football playoff game to Cleveland Farrell, and we're not going to say one word about his performance.
And my rankings ain't going to move a bit.
It's been fun. We talked some offensive tackle. Last couple of days have been good. Man, we could talk more offensive tackles, but we have to touch on interior offensive line.
We can. I know. There's a couple of other dudes that I wish we could talk about, but you know.
It's the opposite of last year's class for me. I didn't like
the tackle class. You'll just have to head over to thedraftnetwork.com.
Yes, draftnetwork.com, folks. If you haven't checked it out, positional rankings from myself, Trevor, Kyle Krabs, Joe Marino, the Draft Dudes, their podcast. Check out their podcast as well, and check out all of our top 10 rankings over at thedraftnetwork.com. They dropped yesterday. It's been a lot of fun talking through those with a lot of people, but we're going to have lots of great stuff rolling out throughout the rest of the week as well. Kyle's dropping his top 50 big board today. That drops today.
Wednesday, so yes, yeah, today.
That's correct. And tomorrow I will have my top 50 big board. Right? And yes, and you will have yours Friday. And then Joe will have it on Saturday. Yeah. That's not news to you.
I know. I'm just kidding. I just like to mess with you because you're the content guy.
I know. Somebody said that today. They were like, hey, did you answer my question? I was like, I definitely did. Definitely did. And they were like, yeah, I know. I'm just screwing with you. I was like, okay. I think that the interior offensive line class is very opposite of where we were at last year. Last year, I did not think highly of the tackle class. A lot of developmental guys that were going to have to land in good spots. This year, I really like the tackle class from what I've seen so far, and I don't like the interior line class at all, where last year was probably the best interior line class I've ever scouted.
I'm going to go out on a limb and just – I know this is a limb here – and say that there's not going to be as good of an interior line prospect as Quentin Nelson in this draft.
Big hot take from you on Wednesday, Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. Big hot take.
You heard it here first.
Let it simmer for a second.
Mainly because no one else has had to say that.
Let it simmer. Okay. Nobody as good as Quentin Nelson. Wild to think about. Big if true. However, there's some
big
good.
If true.
I don't think there's a first rounder. I'm just going to say it. Out of guys who play interior offensive line right now, I haven't seen anybody I'd take. I'll abridge that. I've seen hardly anybody that I'll take in the first round. Nobody I'd even consider in the first round except for Tyler Beatus. I don't even know if I'm saying his name right. I should just call him Tyler Badass from Wisconsin. Dude is tough. He's physical. Hit some crazy reach blocks against Ohio State. For me, and I've said this before, I always like to watch guys, especially in the offensive line, against the top competition that they'll
play.
There's just the NFL is so loaded on the interior defensive line that you've got to watch these guys against the best, or there's really not much point in watching them to me. Like, it
what's
is so
another position?
Difficult.
Is there another position that's even close?
I think interior defensive line and edge, to be honest, like the most loaded position in the NFL.
Because I think you know, when I think corner, I think I wrote about this recently. When corner's you really good, think about it, we're talking about like some of the top corners. Mm-hmm. They face, let's say they face NFL wide receivers. What, like?
Oh,
twice?
Yeah.
Three times? In their college
yeah.
career?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, you have some guys. We talked about this with Trey Adams. How many good edge rushers is Trey Adams facing?
Yeah, no, same thing. It's kind of same thing.
You know, and that changes for the conference, too. You know, we said that. So, I mean, it is – yeah, it's important. So that's why I take Jonah Williams tape so because he's facing – I mean, dude faced everybody last year. You know what I mean?
That's true.
All the good ones. So, I mean, he's had some great battles that he's had to go out there and win. So, all that to say, I think Beatus has played really high levels of competition because Michigan, you're getting that. You're getting that for sure at Ohio State, obviously. Penn State's finally got some guys on their D-line to get excited
about.
Wow,
Big Ten stand over here.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good conference to be able to evaluate line play, I think. It makes it easy in terms of projecting, and that's why there's been a lot of successful ones from this conference, and especially from Wisconsin. So I think that you know the type of coaching he's getting. You know his the technique, honestly. All the Wisconsin guys, to me, when I watched them, I thought technique was just really, really good. And we really have three guys we could talk about. Bo Benschweizel, who a lot of people have said he's going to be the top interior offensive lineman off the board. I didn't really see it that way, but I also didn't hate him. I know like some people have said he's a day three guy for sure. So it's like really opposite ends of the extreme with him right now. Our boy Owen Reese said he was a day three guy. I think Kyle Krabs thinks he's a day three guy. I saw a day two guy still, but not anybody to get super excited about for sure.
It's hard because it's hard to get excited about all these guys, I think. I think Tyler, as you're talking about there, I thought he was the best of the guys, at least that we watched for this podcast and for the rankings that we had, because he's my number one interior O-line guy. I thought he had a little bit of a mean streak to him. I thought he was pretty technically sound. And I thought he could – I think what set him apart – some of these other guys, I thought he could move better than a lot of these other dudes. I thought he could get to point A from point B, whether it was pulling or doing work with screens or whatever it was. I thought that he got to his spot where he needed to get to redirect and block a guy a certain way, open up a hole better than most of these guys that I watched. And so that right away, I mean, if I don't trust these other guys to be able to move to where they need to move to, I know the NFL is a pretty complex game. There are some teams in the NFL that do some complex things with their running game. And yeah, I mean, if you can't move, you're eliminated from most of those teams that are doing anything like that and that are doing anything complex with their offensive line. And so that always worries me. And then so I guess he was my top guy just because I thought he moved better than everybody else.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think you're spot on, and the technique's really good as well. Hand placement, he's really a testament to the fact that people think about outside zone is you have to be a great athlete. It helps, but you have to be really good with your steps, and you have to be really good with your hands. If you get your hand center mass on outside zone, you've got a much better chance of getting your head and your shoulders across that player's chest to where your helmet's play side on them than if you don't have good hand placement. I mean, it's just that important, is to make sure you have good hand placement and continue to run your feet through contact. So, you know, that attention to detail I thought was there with him. And, you know, there's some things that need fixed up for sure. You know, he's not perfect, but I think that he's the best interior offensive lineman I've seen in this class so far. There's other guys worth noting. Two guys getting hype are Alabama's crew, Lester Cotton, the right guard, Ross Pierschbacher, the left guard, who is kicking to center this year. Probably a good move because I did not think he was particularly traitsy or powerful. I think you can get away with a little bit.
Traitsy?
Yeah, he's not really traitsy. He's not a great athlete. Not super.
Did you just make that word up?
I've heard people say that before.
Traitsy?
Nah, I mean,
I know what you were saying, but
that's a thing.
You usually say toolsy.
Toolsy, traitsy.
And this time you said traitsy.
See, I think traitsy more as in, like, does he have intangible tangible traits like, you know, his movement skills, his overall flexibility, his explosiveness out of his stance, that kind of stuff. When I think toolsy, for some reason, I think more of like the build, you know, the physical demeanor, you know, that kind of stuff. Does that make sense?
Yeah, a little bit. Okay. If you wanted to make sense, sure. I mean, we all think you're an idiot, but it's fine. as long as you believe it, it's fine.
I very much believe it. But Pierschbacher to me is really just a guy. And I know people are talking about him. Maybe it's just the great names, Pierschbacher and Boschweisel or Benschweisel or whatever. But, man, I think maybe people are just getting caught up in that name hype. I think Lester Cotton is better than Pierschbacher. And Cotton has his issues.
Yeah, I thought both of them were pretty slow. And, I mean, like, I get that Alabama basically, like, overweighs all of their offensive linemen just because they can run it down your throat and they can run power and do whatever they want.
They run zone, too, though. And Lester Cotton,
this is true.
They're asking him to run zone.
I don't know why they're doing it, because I think there was a play where both Cotton and Pierschbacher were pulling. I think it was like a split zone thing. And it just made me laugh because these just these two heavy-footed dudes just, like, stomping to the other side of the line.
Yeah, if Cotton gets you, though, you're going down. Like, you're about
to. I thought he was powerful. But I again, there were other times where I would see him be really powerful, and I'd see him completely either anchor in pass protection or, you know, drive on a guy on a run block. And then there'd be other times where I don't know if he just like struggles with lining dudes up, but like there were a couple times, especially against Tennessee, where I thought he was just like whiffing at air. There were too many times and I'm like, okay, I don't really know what that was.
I think he has some issues, yeah, like body control. That like you're against just, like, Florida State,
it was... up with, and that's why like a consistency with Piersbacher, it was, I saw him do some things that were nice, but even him on like his high end, yeah, I wasn't super pumped about. Like even if he could anchor you for like maybe one or two steps, the defensive lineman was normally overpowering him at some point. I didn't see that with Lester Cotton. I thought that he could handle power pretty well in a lot of different aspects, but then yeah, they were just. Both of them, I went away thinking it was different kinds of inconsistencies, but especially for Cotton, the guy who I thought could be a better power guard and could have a higher ceiling because of how well he dealt with that kind of stuff. I just, again, whiffing at air sometimes. It was just weird. It was weird for me to watch. I wished he was better in that area because I do like him a little bit.
He matched up with DeMarcus Christmas, and it was very from Florida State, and it was a very good matchup. There were some plays where Christmas got him with like a swim move, and then there were a bunch of plays where he buried Christmas. And so I think with Cotton, the biggest thing is when guys work to his edge, like he wants everybody to bull rush him. Like he pass protects like he just wants you to bull rush him. And if you do what he's hoping, you'll lose because you're not moving him. You're not going through him. But if you don't, if you work to his edge, you can really challenge him because he does not redirect really well. And he's not super laterally agile. And he's really bracing himself for a bull rush like every play just because it's his strength. So I think that Christmas really showed the ability to kind of manipulate him on his edge. But as soon as Christmas couldn't, like it was, I mean, when Cotton gets his mitts on you, it's good stuff. Like he can put you down. So I think that scheme limitations on him for sure. Like Alabama runs a ton of zone, but you know, he's not always super effective in that, and I just don't think it's a great fit for him. And I know that's kind of really stereotyping him as this massive, heavy-footed guard, but that's really what he is. And, like,
but I mean,
to some degree, like, it's a stereotype because it's true. Like, you know, like, you can't always have those kind of things, and you have to be really technical, and I don't think he is to that level. I don't think he has that type of body control either. So
here's a question. Do you think that what's the center from Wisconsin's name? I'm blanking. What's his name?
Piattas.
Yeah. Do you think that how well do you think that he could move to other positions? Like, say, because he plays center now, but, like, do you think he could be a guard?
So if you're a great center, I would just...
Because there's a reason, and the reason why I bring that up is because, you know, on our website, and as we have kind of done as scouts over the last couple of years, is we've changed positions a little bit from like what you would see in Madden, right? Like it used to be you could scout and you could go, okay, offensive tackle, offensive guard, center, you know, D tackle, D end, three, four outside linebacker, like all that kind of stuff, right? And so now it's kind of condensed to, hey, these are interior offensive linemen, these are interior defensive linemen. And so with interior offensive linemen in one category as we grade them, that has to, in your mind at least, when you think about these types of players, you have to think about their ability to play either center or either guard position. And so I just wanted to ask you that because I see that a lot in the NFL. A lot of guys say, you know, you basically have to be versatile. You know, Dirk Cutter is the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and he always says until you get a starting spot, you have to be able to play all five positions or you're just not worth a roster spot to us in case somebody goes down.
Yep.
So I think that's
and they would honestly rather have somebody who plays all five positions bad if they're going to be a backup than somebody who just plays one at a decent level. That's what NFL teams would rather have. It makes no sense in some ways, but that's what they'd rather have. That's just the reality. So, yeah, I mean, it's a good point. And I think that that's why we talked about it, but there's no point in really distinguishing between interior and between guards and centers in our interior offensive line rankings, which is why we've just dubbed them interior offensive line, because there's no point. Half these dudes move. I mean, almost everybody does. Corbett played tackle, was at center a ton at the Senior Bowl, and now is a guard, but could also play center, and they thought about him at tackle with Cleveland. Like, you're probably going to move around. You know, it's tempting to even merge all offensive linemen at some point, except that we know tackles are still of higher value, it seems like, to the NFL. So,
right.
My biggest thing is that, like, versatility is big. Do I think he could? Yes, but to me, he's a guy that you're probably going to draft high enough to where you have a position in mind for him. One of the bigger things I think, and I talked to Brandon Thorne about this the other day, I said to him, I just texted him this the other day. I said, if you had to pick out why a guard couldn't play center or a center couldn't play guard, like what would be the distinguishing characteristics? And he named a bunch of things, but he said football intelligence is bigger for centers.
Sure.
He thinks maybe hand technique is bigger for centers too. But he said for guards, he thinks size, strength, and athleticism is more important. And to me, Beattis is listed 6'3", 322. I don't know if he's going to be quite 6'3". He's short, but it's good.
He doesn't look 6'3".
Yeah, he's stocky, but he looked smaller to me. I think his best position is going to be center. I definitely don't think he's 322 pounds. No way. I think he's going to be.
I bet he's
310 at most.
6'1¾" and like 310.
Wow, that's short. I think he'll be 6'2" something, but. Okay. All that to say, you know, his arm length will matter too and stuff. I think that does matter. I think Brandon's right because
hashtag arm length scouting.
What are we getting in the B gaps all the time in the NFL now? Edge rushers, the kick inside on long and late downs. And now long and late downs
are second and seven.
Like that's a long and late down. So he's absolutely right.
I'm in Madden drafting 4D ends, man.
That's what you got. I mean, that.
100%.
Teams are loaded up that way. That's teams just that are playing, winning the Super Bowl.
Just playing nickel way. On first and 10, having extra blitz pressure, playing press coverage, real man's defense, you know?
That's what you got to do. That's how teams are winning football games these days, by having multiple guys that can get after the quarterback, which puts a premium on them, all these positions, I think, that we're talking about, all these interior offensive line spots. So, yeah, it's an interesting discussion whether he could play multiple positions. I'm excited to see Pierschbacher at a new position at center because – I do think he didn't have those kind of traits that you want to see at guard, but at center, maybe it works out a little bit more for him. You know, maybe he relies on that intelligence and that savvy a little more, which is kind of what he's known for. And the like physical traits are less and the athletic traits are less noticeable. Maybe the fact that they're minimal. Now I will say this, he's got to create movement more. Like there's just nothing from him in the run game. Like I think he's okay in zone, but he just doesn't push people around. Like,
yeah, no, like I said, he's not – even when dudes just straight bull rushed him, he might anchor for like a second, but I felt like he lost anchor a lot.
Yeah.
And therefore driving when run blocking. Yeah. I thought he wasn't great at that. Cotton was clearly better at both of those things than he was.
Two other guys that I liked a lot that are in my top tens that are actually number two and number three after Beattis. And I didn't like him like first round, early second or anything like that. Actually, Beattis is the only interior offensive lineman in my top 50. I'm just going to be honest. But Garrett Brumfield from LSU, some of the highs with Garrett Brumfield are really exciting. Dude is nasty. He can move. His frame is unbelievable. 6'4", 300,
waiting for the negative
or something.
I'm waiting for the negative.
The negative is that the technique kind of comes and goes a little bit. There's some over aggressiveness.
Man, nobody needs technique, John. Forget technique.
I know he's going to be. When you watch him, he's going to move up top to your board because you're just about the aesthetic, and he is aesthetically pleasing. Let's put it
that way. If he's got a dark visor and a DNA Schultz helmet.
But he chirps, and he's like a yoked 305. So, and he's a great interview, like intensity. So I think he went back to school because he knew he needed to clean that stuff up. And as a senior, I bet he goes out this year and he kills it. I think he's going to help his stock a lot right now. Day two somewhere, probably mid to late, but I think he helps himself a lot this year. So he's one I have hope for. Holtorf. I don't even remember his last name right now, dude. Holtorf. Adam. Is it Adam?
That is his last name.
I know his first name. Sorry. I mean,
I don't even remember which part of his name.
I don't remember. That's how bad it's gotten.
I said something about what you and I had a back and forth on Twitter or something. And you were like, oh yeah, you didn't even list this guy. And I'm like, yeah, it's cause he's a Harry Potter character. He's not even a real offensive lineman. Holtorf.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. Adam Holtorf sounds like one of the dwarves from Lord of the Rings, to be honest, but he is 6'4", 295 pounds. What he's listed at. Not the biggest dude, but like the heaviest, but good technique. I do want to see how good of an athlete he is, but good technique. He plays center for Kansas State right now too. So
yeah,
I think
Kansas State, Kansas State's line's good.
Yeah, dude. I saw France was high on your offensive tackle rankings. I thought I was going to be the highest on him, and you and Cal were both higher on France than me.
Nope, France is good.
He's good, and he's not the biggest dude, but he's super technical. I mean, they're honestly
he's good.
He and Reisner and Holtorf all should be top 100 picks, in my opinion. That's what they all look like to me. So what I've seen so far, I got to see more of all of them for sure. I've seen like two games of all of them, I think, but I've been excited about all those, that group, and they might have a sneaky good team this year, to be honest. Kansas State might surprise some people. I don't know if people are expecting them to be good or bad. I'm honestly clueless. Darrell Williams from Mississippi State. And I've heard the other guard, Jonah Tulls, texted me and said, the other guard is somebody to watch, Calhoun from Mississippi State. I have not seen him yet. So, and they've got Elston Jenkins in the middle. So they got three interior offensive linemen there from Mississippi State that it sounds like are going to play in the NFL. And that's going to help a lot when they beat Alabama this season. I think it's going to be one of the leading factors in them beating Alabama this season.
Wait. Wait, which school were we talking about here?
Mississippi State, sir.
All right, just wanted to make sure.
Formula to beating Alabama is to have difference makers in the trenches on both sides. Leo Lewis is going to have a bounce back year at linebacker from Miss State. Got Jeffrey Simmons. You got Montez Sweat. You got Jerry Green. They got some dudes. They're gonna do it. It's going to happen. People are going to be shocked, but that's a team you don't mess with this season. I'm telling you.
All right. Bold.
That's
bold.
Really all. I mean, Hjalte Froholt, and I'm probably saying his name last. Actually, everybody gets his name wrong, and he was actually laughing about that in a recent interview. And he said there's multiple ways to say his name, which just confused everybody even further. But anyway, the Arkansas senior who played left guard last year did not really impress me at all when I watched him. Just played like a super nice guy, I thought. And I was like, you know, you get that vibe from some guys,
dudes.
Right?
Like, I don't want those dudes.
Yeah, like, I'm like, I don't know, buddy. Better step it up.
Just played like a super nice dude. That's exactly what I don't want to hear.
I'm sorry to throw this slander out there too, but dude, Martez Ivey was probably the worst offensive lineman I've watched.
Oh, he's not good. John, I've tried to tell
you
this throughout
the
summer.
I just
feel Florida's bad. Coaches did not coach a single person for the last 3 years. It's why Chauncey Gardner sucks. It's why Martez Ivey sucks. It's why basically all of their quarterbacks have continued to suck. McElwain had the worst coaching staff in America.
Would you fight McElwain right now if you could?
Fist fight.
Fisticuffs.
No gloves.
Jack Johnson
gloves.
And Tom O'Leary.
It would be a ladders and chairs match.
It be a triple match with a shark? Or a dolphin. What was he humping in that video?
Yeah, it was a shark.
Was that him? Do you think that was him? I've never asked you that on the podcast.
I won't answer that unless a fan asks it on Fan Friday.
You definitely think it was him because you would just answer. You'd be like, nah. That was it was him.
I will not answer this question unless it is asked from a fan,
Deny our fans. What about Spectator Saturday? Will you answer it on Spectator Saturday?
Maybe.
All right.
This is it. They might just have to wait 2 weeks.
No, it's this week. We got a Spectator Saturday this week. So, gird up. You're going to have to answer because one of our faithful fans is listening right now and making a personal note on their phone to send tweet. Which is something that you do quite often, I think. So you should respect that gamerism. But they're going to send that tweet Thursday night or whenever I put out the query for questions. And you're going to have to tell the world whether you think Jim McElwain, in the nude, laid upon a shark and took an image of him grinning like a Cheshire cat. You're going to have to answer that question. And I personally cannot wait for Spectator Saturday. It's going to be a great week on the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Keep listening all week. We've got tons of great content lined up for you. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about our top 10 some. My top 50 board will be out. We'll preview Trevor's top 50 board a little bit as well. It's going to be really fun stuff. And Friday, we've got the Super Show with Kyle and Joe over at the Draft Dudes. Make sure you subscribe to the Draft Dudes podcast. Really good stuff going on there. And then Spectator Saturday, got a little Q&A with you all for the fans. We're looking forward to it. Ask your Jim McElwain questions. Until then, keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.